retaliation indicates after she filed that claim and is subject to adverse action thereafter. Your Honor, in this case, the trial court entered summary judgment with respect to count one, with respect to the overtime compensation issue. This case, therefore, squarely addresses the question of the type and quantity of evidence a Title VII plaintiff must establish to survive a motion for summary judgment under the rubric known as McDonnell-Douglas, well known by law in the civil rights area. At the onset, it should be noted that the trial court correctly determined in this case with respect to count one, and I quote, that Demansky has stated a prima facie case of discrimination under the background circumstances test. Demansky, who is white, has established that Dr. Wynn, who was Asian, denied her overtime and told her there was no overtime available, and yet he allowed Cancino, another nurse, who was also Asian, to work practically all of the overtime in the ASC in violation of hospital policy. I note particular attention to the court's observation that this particular practice of Dr. Wynn was in violation of the policy. Two things are important, I think, to look at.
Well, he was giving you the benefit of the doubt and all that, as he was required to do.
Yes.
Right.
And two things are important. In this case, there was a daily need for overtime at the county in 2000. Secondly, county payroll records in the trial court reflect that Cancino received 1,239 hours of overtime in 1 year, as compared to Demansky's 46 total hours. Given that the trial court's agreement that we had established a prima facie case with respect to race, were really essentially two questions under the McDonnell-Douglas analysis. The first of which is whether the county articulated a non-discriminatory reason for their action, and if so, whether Demansky has presented sufficient evidence demonstrating that those reasons are pretextual in nature.
You zeroed in on the second reason. He was with you as far as the first reason, in terms of saying that you had enough for a genuine issue of fact. He thought that you had produced enough to show a genuine issue of fact on the question whether people wanted, whether she in particular was indicating that she wanted to work overtime. But then he got to the second reason, that ASC didn't have to pay for Cancino's overtime. In a sense, rightly or wrongly, but if they didn't have to pay, that's where he thought that your proof fell apart, that you didn't have enough to show that that wasn't something that that was genuinely believed by the decision maker.
Yes, Your Honor. There were two ostensible articulated reasons in this case. One, that Demansky simply didn't ask for the overtime. And as you observed, that was overruled. It was a question of material fact. It really is based upon depositions.
So for you, you need to focus on the second one.
The second issue, that second defense, this separate budget defense.
Right.
The court determined that plaintiff failed to present sufficient evidence to create any question of fact with respect to that issue.
What was your evidence on that?
In fact, Your Honor, if I may, the court did not really say that, that we failed to set forth sufficient evidence to create a question of fact. The court said it is up to Demansky to prove in the context of summary judgment that that evidence constitutes discrimination as a matter of law.
No, but
whether it's proved or not, what was the evidence you presented to show that the money, that the pot she was paid out of was not the pot?
Okay. In fact,
was not the ASC pot.
Right. The issue is,
I mean, her salary, according to the defendants, came out of the GU clinic budget rather than the ASC pot. So what evidence did you have to show she wasn't paid from that?
The first thing we argued, Judge, was that regardless if it comes from ASC or GU, these are all part of clinics within Fantas.
So the evidence, you didn't have any evidence that it came out of a different pot?
No,
like
we did not.
Right. Okay.
But we looked at and we advised the court, there's a specific document in this case which is dispositive of that defense, and that is Hospital Policy 61042, which in our case provides that overtime must be equitably distributed. But more importantly, it provides that at no time, and I quote from that policy, at no time shall employees be assigned overtime in any department they are not budgeted, except in emergencies. So, the first issue was, this comes from the GU clinic, therefore you can't state a cause of action. Her first articulation, or proof, if you will, was that that particular defense is impossible given the published policy. fact then, Cancino was entitled not to one single hour of overtime. That's the first thing we showed the court. Secondly, we showed the court that Dr. Wynn really admitted in his deposition that he not only didn't see the budget, he had no participation in its preparation and could care less about it. It simply wasn't an operative factor in his mind at the time he excluded her from that overtime. Dr. Wynn also admitted that he assigned the $1,238 to Cancino over that year with full knowledge of the provisions of policy 610.42.
Hadn't Cancino been working similar hours even before Dr. Wynn took over?
Mm-hmm. Indeed she had. In fact, I believe the proofs indicated that in 1999 she had over 600 hours mm-hmm. under Dr. Smith. The point we raised with the court was on January 2000, Samansky came in and said, I'm filing a charge. I'm asking you to stop. I'm asking you to observe prospectively. You didn't ask for any retroactively, but prospectively, I'm asking you to take this into consideration. This is just simply discriminatory. And Dr. Wynn, there's no question, was totally in charge as director in ASC from 2000 January throughout the period of litigation. And when we get to these particular types of proof, 610.42, the fact that Wynn knew about these EEOC cases that were pending, that he was identified as responsible management official, he nonetheless determined to exclude Domansky from that time forward and prospectively all through 2000 until the trial, in fact. So our real argument in this case, Your Honors, is that really the court did not find that we failed to set forth a sufficient question of material fact. The court really said, I'm going to make it a higher burden on you plaintiffs in Title VII. I'm going to make you prove that your evidence is sufficient at the juncture in summary judgment to constitute real discrimination or actionable discrimination.
But you know, you seize on this word that the court uses at page 14 of his opinion, but if you read the court's opinion as a whole, I think it's quite clear that he realizes that what has to happen is it's very long and cumbersome constantly to say you presented evidence which, if believed by the trier of fact, could support blah, 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 blah. That requires actually a paragraph. And he correctly states it so many times. I find it hard to believe that all of a sudden, randomly, in this one spot, instead of just using the word prove as shorthand for all of that, he's suddenly substantively asking you to dispose of the point. He says you haven't come up with any documentary or other evidence that demonstrates that Cancino was or was not paid from the same budget as the other nurse practitioners. Which budget was it? Is the ASC budget the same as the GU budget? Is it two budgets? Is it one budget? Is there some long-term violation of hospital policy going on that predates Wynn? These are evidentiary materials that a trier of fact could view in your favor. But you can't find it.
Well, trier of fact can view in our favor the provisions that Dr. Wynn and the hospital were operating under, which says that person from GU may not, consistent with our own policies, work in ASC. That is to say, that's objective evidence that a trier of fact can sit there and say, you know what, I don't believe the explanation of Dr. Wynn. More importantly, aside from that evidence, which we think existed at the summary judgment stage, more importantly, that quote of the judges, and I say it this way, quote, it is up to Zemanski not only to cast doubt on the veracity of the defendant's reason, but also to prove that that reason was discrimination.
Well, ultimately, that will be her burden. You have to have enough evidence in the record that the trier of fact, if it believes your evidence, because once you get through this whole McDonnell Douglas business, burden of proof never shifts. That, in a sense, is correct.
It is, in fact, the ultimate bottom line. We do have that burden.
Right.
But that burden can be satisfied with direct evidence, having a thorough look at hospital policies, cross examination. In fact, cases have so held that a prima facie case standing alone can be sufficient to win.
Okay.
In the trial court, the courts really then raise the bar for the plaintiff to an impossible level. And moreover, if the trial court is right that this is a case of prima facie case on the one hand, and he says, well, you have to prove beyond a doubt there's discrimination in the summary judgment process, I submit that it's unreasonable because at that point, there's no function for a court or the jury. In other words, I'm forced to win the case on summary judgment without benefit of a trial, without the first exhibit on these issues at all. And I think Reeves versus Sanderson, Stone versus the City of Indianapolis, the Seventh Circuit case, really looks at this kind of behavior and rejects it as an abuse of discretion. I think really that's our argument to the extent, Your Honor, we've dealt with the other issue, which is retaliation. The same argument. If it was wrong in the first count, certainly was wrong in the second. Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Okay. May it please the Court, Mr. Bridge, Mr. Gorman. Your Honor, I would like to confine my argument to what I believe is the one narrow issue on appeal in this case, and that is the whether plaintiffs rebutted the second proper reason that Cook County gave. I'm sorry, my name is Greg Basie. I represent Cook County in this case. I also represented Cook County in the trial in this matter and the summary judgment as well.
Why isn't it something that a trier of fact could take into account? You're essentially asking us to assume as a matter of law that the hospital's ordinary and normal business policies were not followed. And why couldn't that be evidence that, in fact, Cancino was not paid out of the GU budget, that she somehow, you know, was cross-assigned over to the other budget? And, you know, there's a presumption of business regularity when you show normal operating procedures.
Just as kind of a two-part answer to that. First, that particular argument was never made at summary judgment. Summary judgment argument that was in direct response to that proper reason, the separate budget reason, was that the defendant, I expect that the plaintiff argued that the reason given, separate budget reason, was also pretextual and without merit. And also that it was entirely irrelevant to this case. And obviously the court found that not to be helpful in determining Dr. Wynn's motivation, which is what is at issue here. You have Dr. Wynn testifying that he was basically getting this other nurse practitioner's services for free.
Are you telling me then that when we dig into the record, we are going to find that the plaintiff didn't offer up this business policy to the district court as a reason to defeat summary judgment on the second pretext theory?
That's correct.
Okay.
And also, it, the second part of the question, I don't believe that that question of whether they were violated, obviously there is a question of fact regarding that, but I don't believe that has any impact on what Dr. Wynn was testifying to, which was that he got these services for free. Nurse Cancino was able to come into his unit, and the money to pay that nurse came from elsewhere. And I don't think, as counsel stated, that was not disputed, the fact that she was actually paid from another budget. And certainly there were other ways to attack that statement by Dr. Wynn.
Didn't he testify he wasn't familiar with either budget?
I'm sorry?
Dr. Wynn testify he wasn't familiar with either budget?
I don't think he testified that he wasn't familiar. I think his counsel made the argument that Dr. Wynn testified that he did not have input into the budget. He did not, he wasn't present for the creation of the budget, and maybe he did not actually see the physical document, but he left no doubt that in his mind he knew that Ms. Cancino was being paid out of another budget.
So was that because he didn't have to approve her overtime request as he did for nurse practitioners?
Right.
I mean, there was some discussion in his deposition about how he went about this. Can you tell us exactly what he said?
Well, just so you have a little bit of understanding how it was set up, there were four nurse practitioners, four or five, in the ASC, which is the adult screening clinic. Ms. Cancino worked in the GU clinic. Dr. Nguyen came in as a supervisor, I believe in late 1999, and basically started enforcing an overtime policy that had been in existence, it just had never been enforced before, where all of the nurse practitioners in the unit had to go to him as the supervisor in order to be approved of that overtime. Those restrictions didn't apply to Nurse Cancino because she was not in that unit. So she was effectively working overtime, which was apparently sorely needed. She would come in and work numerous hours.
So was he following, he was following the procedure of his predecessor? Because his predecessor gave her a lot of overtime hours.
Correct.
But are you saying his predecessor didn't have the four that were in that unit come to make requests?
The first proper reason that we gave was that none of the nurse practitioners within the OOC wanted to work overtime. It was rejected because the plaintiff stated she did want to work overtime. So obviously there's a factual issue there, but the second reason was never attacked. Obviously there's been discovery on that point. No inconsistent statements by Dr. Nguyen were ever brought up. He never attempted to show that reason wasn't sufficient for what occurred in the overtime. What essentially they needed to do was show that Dr. Nguyen didn't believe his own reason, and they did not. There was no evidence in the record other than the attempts afterwards after the summary judgment in the motion to reconsider to raise these other arguments, and we would submit that even if this court were to consider those arguments, which the district court did not have the opportunity to consider, they don't show pretext of that second reason. And I don't think there's any dispute that the plaintiff has the burden of rebutting all of the reasons, all of the proper reasons. There are no other questions. I would end my argument to ask this court to deny the appeal and sustain the district court's ruling. Thank you.
I understand you're out of time, but I'll give you another minute.
I appreciate it, Your Honor. Mr. Bates indicated, I think, in his argument that I did not bring this to the attention of district court. For the record, I want you to know that I brought it in summary judgment at R23 tab D, the Nguyen deposition, and the exhibit 642 that I've mentioned to you. I brought it in the summary judgment request for reconsideration. I also placed it as an exhibit in trial, exhibit number 79, and in the motion for new trial, separate appendix F. So in all respects, this issue was not raised for the first time, a request for reconsideration. It was consistently argued in summary judgment all the way to request for a new trial under Rule 59. So I did it five separate times. I thank the court for the extra time.
Thank you, Mr. Bridge. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.